This is edition number 1906 of The Mardler, recorded at Aylsham on Friday the 8th of March 2024. Hello and a warm welcome to The Mardler, the weekly talking newspaper. The only item this week: the sun rises at about 6:15 in the morning and sets around 6:30 in the afternoon. Our week's news and views are from the North Norfolk News of Thursday the 9th of March. I am Bill Newby Grant, and my fellow readers are
Hilary Newby Grant,
Claire Hill
and Jill Mellows.
The magazine supplement, which includes Annoying Things in Restaurants, Benefits of a Driving Awareness Course, Earworms Bring Joy, Thoughts on Self-Service Checkouts, will follow a little later in the programme. But first, father of two who died by suicide strived to do his best, court is told. Minister backs plans for a £3 million roundabout. Action to stop anglers felling trees on the Broads. However, we lead with a plan to redevelop tennis court at park scrapped. Plans to turn a derelict tennis court into a thriving community space have been scrapped after a town council pulled the plug on the project over costs. A scheme to redevelop a rundown section of Cromer's North Lodge Park was given the green light by North Norfolk District Council last year. The plans, which had been years in the making, would have seen the abandoned tennis courts and a 1950s bandstand demolished to make way for a multi-use space for pop-up markets, events and new public conveniences. But now Cromer Town Council, who submitted the application with the Friends of North Lodge Park, have pulled out of the plans, stating it is unable to commit to the costs involved in the project. The council said, while it recognises the importance of a community hub and the need for public conveniences at the park, it is no longer viable due to the cost and work required. A Cromer Town Council spokesperson said, "We are extremely disappointed that we are unable to deliver this project, knowing the need for conveniences at this end of the town, along with the facilities that a community hub would offer, but feel at this point in time we are unable to commit to the costs involved in the infrastructure and construction of this facility. We understand that this is disappointing to various groups we were working with, and we wish them well in their future endeavours." The tennis courts on the 0.35-acre site have been unused for more than two decades. Plans for the flexible community facility also included a community shed, a horticultural hub, and space for growing plants. The plans were approved in September last year. The decision will be discussed at Cromer's annual town meeting on Wednesday, March the 27th, from 7 p.m. at Cromer Parish Hall.
A much-loved 33-year-old father who strived to do the best for his loved ones died by suicide, a coroner concluded. Liam Kingswell of Beckmeadow Way, Munsley, was found at his home by his wife Catherine on the morning of September the 17th, 2023. He was taken to the Norfolk and Norwich Hospital by air ambulance but died 2 days later on September the 19th. An inquest into his death was held at Norfolk Coroner's Court, based at the County Hall in Norwich. The court heard that he launched his own marketing agency after being made redundant at the start of the pandemic in 2020. He had also recently become a business partner in a second business with an aim to reducing his hours to spend more time with his family. The weekend before his death, the couple celebrated a friend's wedding and were making plans for a Christmas holiday in Lapland and trips away to visit friends. His wife, Catherine, paid tribute to her husband via a family statement to the court. She said Liam was in good physical health before the incident. He regularly took our daughter to taekwondo in the village, something they both enjoyed and he excelled at. He enjoyed walking on the beach and sea swimming with our dog. He had some mental health problems, for which he took medication. He was well liked and had an active social life, being a proud member of the local round table group and organise some very popular social events for them. Additionally, at their meetings, he would openly discuss mental health with them, which is something as a group that they take very seriously. Liam was a very proud family man who unfortunately put a lot of pressure on himself to achieve perfection in anything he undertook. He always strived to do the best for our children and worked tirelessly to ensure it happened. Since his death, more than £13,500 has been raised in the company director's memory via GoFundMe. A long-serving member of Sheringham and Cromer Roundtable, the fundraiser saw several roundtables from around the country donating. Following his death, his wishes were to donate his kidneys, heart, liver and pancreas. Area coroner Yvonne Blake concluded that Mr. Kingswell died by suicide.
Hopes for a new £3 million roundabout have received a boost from the government after Minister Michael Gove described it as one of the single most important infrastructure investments in Norfolk. Norfolk County Council has been carrying out a £50,000 feasibility study for a new roundabout where the A148 Holt Road turns off to Holway Road in Sheringham. North Norfolk MP Duncan Baker, who has been campaigning for a roundabout at the dangerous junction, raised it in Parliament this week with hopes that Wednesday's budget could help the project get off the ground. Mr. Baker, speaking in Parliament on Monday, said, "The budget in a couple of days has got two things it could do for Norfolk. Firstly, we could announce the county deal and give Norfolk control of its future. But even more importantly than that, it could provide the vehicle for my Sheringham roundabout, which the ministers know all about, which will be wonderful for my North Norfolk constituency." It comes as Norfolk County Council has accepted a county devolution deal offer from the government, which will transfer power and funding from Whitehall to County Hall. The deal includes investment of £20 million a year for 30 years, totalling £600 million to invest in areas such as transport, jobs and housing. Mr. Gove, the Government Secretary of State for Levelling Up, Housing and Communities, said, "Sheringham Roundabout is one of the single most important infrastructure investments in Norfolk. The member for North Norfolk has made the case convincingly to me, and I hope we will be able to get motoring on it before too long." He added, "My department is supporting the implementation of the Norfolk devolution deal, which is progressing well. Norfolk County Council intends to vote to change its governments in July, leading to the election of a directly elected leader in May 2025.
An area of marshland on the Norfolk Broads has been given extra protection amid fears people are clearing trees to reach the water to fish. Crabbits Marsh, a secluded area just off the River Bure in Horning, has been granted a tree protection order by the Broads Authority as part of efforts to conserve the habitat. It means anyone found to be clearing the woodland would be liable for prosecution, which could result in a fine of up to £20,000. It follows reports of landowners cutting through sections of the woodland to gain access to the water, collecting logs and also creating space for driveways. But the move has been met with a number of objections from property owners in the woodland site who argued the order would be in contravention of the BA's responsibility to maintain navigation of the waterways because the trees can block dikes through the marsh. An objector also questioned whether the BA had the authority to serve a TPO, attacking the public body for being unelected, unaccountable and policing themselves. Speaking at a planning committee meeting, Richard Jeffries, who owns a property within Crabbits Marsh, argued the order would cover an area within his garden, accusing the BA of shoddy homework. However, members of the BA were eager to help protect the woodland. They agreed that it contributed greatly to the amenity of the area and that it was an important ecosystem. Tim Jickles, a former professor specialising in marine science, urged the BA to do everything it can to preserve this fabulous place. There were concerns that enforcement could be difficult as much of the woodland is not accessible to the public. But the BA agreed to speak with property owners to raise awareness about the need to protect the woodland.
A pensioner has been warned he faces jail for breaching a restraining order for stalking and harassing his ex-wife following the breakup of their 50-year marriage. David Britcher, 81, was handed a 6-week suspended jail term and banned from contact with both his estranged wife and his niece after being convicted of stalking, criminal damage and assault last August. Norwich Magistrates Court was told he had repeatedly ignored the court order by entering areas of Drayton and Spixworth from where he is banned. Jane Brewer, prosecuting, said he had committed persistent breaches to 2 separate restraining orders that have been put in place until May 2025. In the last 12 months, he had committed 9 offences, including stalking and assaulting his ex-wife, theft of her jewellery, and criminal damage, she added. Magistrates had previously ordered his movements be electronically monitored by GPS tag, but this had not happened due to his age and health, the court was told. Despite being prohibited from entering Drayton, he had been seen at the Otter Pub and entering Tesco's on January the 17th, said Miss Brewer. Police were called to the pub again on January the 24th, where he blamed his age for being confused about the details of the restraining order. Britcher, of Buxton Road, Aylsham, pleaded guilty to harassment by breaches of a restraining order. Miss Brewer told magistrates they must activate the suspended jail sentence unless it was unjust to do so. Magistrates, who ordered a re-sentence report, told Britcher he faces prison because his serious offences were identical to those for his original sentence. A further breach of a protection from harassment order by driving slowly past his niece's Spixworth home on 4 separate occasions was withdrawn after prosecutors agreed to vary the area he is banned from in a bid to stop further breaches. Lisa Robinson, mitigating, said he would be contesting whether it had been just to send him to prison due to his age.
When Pilates teacher John Hawkins set up a studio at his home in a quiet Norfolk village, he hoped to help people rediscover their zest for life by improving their strength, agility and flexibility. But his dream now looks set to collapse on the mat after he became entangled with the local council, which has accused him of stretching the rules and ordered him to shut down the studio in Webburn. North Norfolk District Council has sent Mr. Hawkins an enforcement notice for running his business Free Range Pilates from a converted barn at Webburn House in the street without the required planning permission. The Pilates teacher had previously received permission to convert the building into a private gym, home office and shower room. But he's now using it for his Pilates studio, giving sessions for private clients, which the council says is unauthorised. Officials have ordered him to stop using the building for this purpose and have issued him with an enforcement notice. They say he will be unlikely to get proper planning permission because the business will create traffic problems on the main road through the village. The enforcement notice says, in the council's opinion, the barn is now being used as a commercial Pilates studio, which is materially different from the private gym that was permitted. In the council's view, there is a highways safety issue due to the lack of emerging visibility onto the street, which is a busy tourist route and a classified road. It's considered the use would be an intensification of the substandard access onto a classified road. The council does not consider that planning permission should be granted for the development because conditions attached to any consent could not overcome those planning issues. Mr. Hawkins, a former osteopath who has been teaching Pilates for 15 years, currently offers both private and group sessions. The council has said he must permanently cease his Pilates lessons within 2 months of when the notice takes effect on March the 12th. He now has until that date to make an appeal. If he does not do so, the enforcement notice comes into effect. Failure to comply with the terms of such a notice is a criminal offence and could result in prosecution. And Mr. Hawkins declined to comment.
A grant has transformed Whiton Village Hall with solar power. The Sheringham Shoal Community Fund has helped the North Norfolk village of Whiton replace its recreation hut with an eco-friendly hub. To the cost of £730,000, the new hall is able to host up to 242 people. Some of the money was provided from a grant from Sheringham Shoal Community Fund, run by Equinor, the company that operates the Sheringham Shoal offshore wind farm. The contribution enabled the installation of a 430 kilowatt solar PV panel system in the refurbished building. Its primary role is to generate electricity for an air source heat pump. The pump provides underfloor heating and hot water for the hall, alongside charging two electric vehicles in the car park. Equinor's Norfolk stakeholder manager, Susan Fulch Lovesey, paid a visit last year to commemorate the successful installation and commissioning of the solar PV system. Chairman of the Management Committee, George Brett Reynolds, said, "As the underfloor heating system is powered by the 36 roof-based solar panels, we're now able to offer a warm, welcoming atmosphere regardless of the time of the day for which the hall is booked for an event or activity." When developing the plans for the new village hall, the project committee undertook considerable research through visits to other community facilities and efficient, cost-effective heating, along with high-quality acoustics, featured highly when the results of those visits were analysed. By the end of 2023, the Sheringham Shoal Community Fund, administered by the Norfolk Community Foundation, has awarded grants totalling more than £1.2 million since its establishment in 2010. It receives an annual £100,000 donation from the Sheringham Shoal offshore wind farm.
New measures to slow down drivers and make roads safer for pedestrians are to be introduced in more than 100 towns and villages across Norfolk. Just over £1 million is due to be spent on 118 highway schemes, including vehicle-activated speed signs, bus shelters and new footpaths. The changes will be made through Norfolk County Council's Parish Partnership Initiative to make towns and villages safer. First launched in September 2011, the scheme invites communities to bid for cash to make much-needed improvements. Norfolk County Council, which last week agreed to make £42 million of cuts and savings, will put in almost £470,000 and the Safety Camera Partnership, £44,000. Town and parish councils match fund that money to pay the remaining cost of all the schemes, a contribution of about £485,000. The schemes include 26 village gateways, where signs and road markings remind drivers they are entering an area where they ought to slow down and pay extra attention. 21 SAM2 cameras, signs activated by vehicles to flash up a message to slow down. 14 trod footpaths. A trod footpath is a low-cost footway often made using recycled road surface material. 10 bus shelters. Among the towns and villages where improvements will be made are Sheringham, Dereham, Aylsham, Loddon, Thetford, Salhouse, Stoke Ferry, Wotton, Wroxham, Scarning and Potter Heigham. The spending on the schemes comes at a time when the authority is making £42 million of cuts and savings. Graham Plant, the Conservative-controlled Cabinet Member for Highways, Infrastructure and Transport, said, "Our scheme has proved popular this year, as we had hoped, and I'm delighted that we've been able to support every bid we've received. With the match funding we provide, we'll see more than £1 million spent across Norfolk on schemes that have been put forward by local communities. It's always great to see these bids come in, and it highlights what is important to our towns and parishes. I look forward to seeing new bids come in over the next year as the scheme begins its 14th year.
Following a local outcry, it has been confirmed that a beloved piece of play equipment will be returned to the Market Town Park. The blue rocking horse had been a key feature of North Walsham's Memorial Park since the 1960s until it was removed this week. Wendy Murphy, North Walsham's town clerk, said the horse had been taken away due to general wear and tear, but said she was hopeful it could be repaired. Its removal sparked complaints from heartbroken neighbours, leading to North Norfolk MP Duncan Baker to intervene. He confirmed in a social media statement that the rocking horse will be returned to its full former glory as swiftly as possible. He said, following several concerned residents making contact with me this morning about the removal of the much-loved rocking horse from the Memorial Park, my office has already been in touch with the Town Council to see what their plans are. I'm very pleased to say that the rocking horse will be returned to its full former glory, and we will be working with the Town Council to ensure that this happens as swiftly as possible.
A search has begun for the family of a 65-year-old man after his body was found in the Norfolk Broads. David Cubberley was last seen on Sunday, February the 11th, but concerns were raised for him around 3 p.m. on Saturday, February the 17th, after his boat, normally moored near the pleasure boat in Hickling, was found in reeds about half a mile away. On Wednesday afternoon, a body was found in nearby Candle Dyke, following an extensive search by the emergency services. It is understood that Mr. Cubberley lived on his boat, called Fun for Us Too, after his partner, Felicity, died falling down the stairs at their home in Cromer 2 years ago. A close friend said they had been together for 40 years and it really took a toll on him. Norfolk Coroner's Service is now appealing to trace Mr. Cubberley's next of kin. A spokesman said that despite carrying out extensive inquiries, no next of kin has been identified. So anyone with information relating to David is urged to contact the Coroner's Office on 01603 774 773 or by emailing coroner@norfolk.gov.uk.
A town's busy pedestrian cut-through will be closed for 3 days while £12,000 resurfacing work takes place. The cut-through between North Walsham's marketplace and the Bankloke car park will be closed for 3 days from March the 18th. The path will be resurfaced as part of a continued project to make the town a more pedestrian-friendly space. A signed diversion will be in place, redirecting pedestrians from Bankloke car park onto Grammar School Road and up to Yarmouth Road before looping back to Marketplace. The High Street Heritage Action Zone works are being funded by Historic England, the New Anglia LEP and North Norfolk District Council. The work to Bankloke will cost £12,000 and will be carried out by Norfolk County Council's Community and Environmental Services Department and its contractors.
A busy road through a village was closed following a crash between a motorcycle and a lorry. Police were called to the A1151 Stalham Road at Beeston St Lawrence at 9:18 a.m. yesterday and closed the road in both directions. One ambulance, a rapid response ambulance vehicle, one ambulance officer vehicle and the East Anglian Air Ambulance attended. One man was taken by road ambulance to the Norfolk and Norwich University Hospital with serious injuries. The road was closed, causing traffic to build up around the area. Meanwhile, police had to close a major road in West Norfolk following a crash. The A148 Grimston Road in King's Lynn near Asda was closed in both directions due to the collision, causing heavy traffic. The road was later cleared. Emergency services attended the scene and two patients were taken by ambulance to the Queen Elizabeth Hospital.
Police are hunting for a wanted man in North Norfolk. Callum Lockie, 24, is wanted on recall to prison for failing to adhere to the conditions set on his licence when he was released. He is believed to be in North Norfolk, as he has connections to Cromer and North Walsham. Lockie also has links to Dereham and Folsham. He is described as white, 5'9" tall, with light brown curly short hair, clean-shaven and of slim build. Anyone who has seen Lockie or knows of his whereabouts is asked to contact Norfolk Constabulary on 101.
A new bubble tea spot has opened in a North Norfolk market town. John and Nicola Redfield launched Redfield's Fruit and Vegetable Shop in North Walsham's Market Street last August. At the start of this year, they opened TJ Blends, a sister business based in the same premises, which uses Redfield's produce to create smoothies and lemon blends. But in the last few weeks, they have also started offering bubble tea, a Taiwanese cold drink containing balls of tapioca that pop and release flavour into the mouth. Mr. and Mrs. Redfield said, "We started offering smoothies in January to complement our fruit and vegetable business. But after chatting with friends in Norwich, we realised that there is a gap for bubble tea in this area, and it is a popular drink." The couple have added some seating to allow people to stay a while to socialise or work, and have already noticed it broadening their customer base. TJ Blend's bubble tea comes in a variety of flavours, including peach, dragon fruit and lychee. And smoothie flavours include mango, summer fruits, blackberry and blueberry.
A North Norfolk cafe takes its afternoon tea up a tier with an all-you-can-eat extravaganza once a month. Byford's in Holt, which is also a B&B, serves afternoon tea daily with the unlimited version available on the last Sunday of every month between 2pm and 4:30pm. On Sunday, March the 31st, is an Easter-themed extravaganza and the sandwiches will be served to your table. You can then head to the dessert table and fill your plate with as many sweet treats as you like. The unlimited treats for Easter include mini egg chocolate fudge cake, carrot opera cake and hot cross frangipani tarts. Tickets cost £32.50 or £16 per person for children aged 6 to 11, with under 6, £10 per person. Book at byfords.org.uk or call 01263 711 400. A £10 deposit is required and you need to add any dietary requirements when booking. They cannot adapt the tea for gluten or dairy allergies. Byford's is also offering a regular Easter afternoon tea with cakes, bakes and savouries from March the 28th to April the 7th, excluding March the 31st, from 2pm to 5pm.
A huge inflatable fun park is returning to the Norfolk Broads this summer. Bounce Town is back for its third year at the playing field at Hoveton Village Hall, with more than 14 inflatables, including bouncy castles, slides and fun runs. The four-day event will run from August the 8th until August the 11th, with three-hour sessions for unlimited play. Refreshments will be available, including coffee and cake, alongside an area where parents can sit and watch their little ones on the inflatables. Further children's entertainment will include outside games and special character meet and greets. Early bird tickets, which cost between £3.99 and £17.50, are available via mhtickets.com.
A surge in vicious dog attacks on sheep has prompted farmers' pleas for owners to keep their pets under control in the Norfolk countryside. New national figures from insurers NFU Mutual have revealed farm animals worth an estimated £2.4 million were severely injured or killed by dogs in 2023, up nearly 30% from the previous year. The increase is believed to be partly due to a surge in dog ownership during the COVID lockdown. And with the spring lambing season underway, farmers have urged owners to keep their dogs on leads around livestock. Fourth generation farmer Andrew Hudson runs a mixed farm at Smallborough near North Walsham, where one sheep was killed and another injured after a dog attack last month. "We have not had any problems until recently," he said. "The first time was last summer, and just a couple of weeks ago one sheep died and one was injured in an attack. I know other farmers have had problems recently. I've heard of incidents where up to 20 sheep were attacked. It is really awful to see these animals suffering. People just don't appreciate what their dogs are capable of. It also has a financial impact and takes time dealing with it at a very busy time of the year. Livestock worrying incidents, which include barking, chasing, biting and killing, can cause anxiety, miscarriage and terrible injuries in farm animals, often leading to euthanasia by a vet. It is a criminal offence and dog owners could be liable for prosecution or a fine. NFU Mutual's recent survey found a 4% increase in people letting their dogs off the lead in the countryside from the previous year. Last month, the government backed a bill to give police greater powers to tackle livestock worrying. The bill, brought forward by Suffolk Coastal MP and former DEFRA Secretary Therese Coffey, included measures allowing officers to seize dogs after serious incidents and to take evidence samples from livestock and dogs to assist investigations. Charles Hesketh, the NFU Regional Policy Manager for the East of England, said, "These proposals are a positive step. No matter how in control dog owners think they are, they should be always remaining alert and dogs should always be kept on a lead around livestock."
A Norfolk MP is planning a second major public flooding meeting after claiming Just Stop Oil protesters tried to hijack the first one. North Norfolk MP Duncan Baker organised a meeting in flood-hit Hickling last month, giving locals the chance to grill a panel of industry experts. However, Mr. Baker claimed protesters from climate activism group Just Stop Oil infiltrated the meeting. Now the MP plans to organise a follow-up meeting in August to find out what progress has been made by representatives from Anglian Water, Norfolk County Council, the Environment Agency, Internal Drainage Board and Norfolk Strategic Flood Alliance. The meeting will take place before the winter season when the heavier rain is expected again, and the exact date of the meeting is yet to be confirmed. Mr. Baker said, "Flooding is a major issue for thousands of North Norfolk residents and business owners. To have over 200 people in the hall at my public meeting, plus an additional 250 watching live, and over 20,000 seeing the recording on my social media, it really does make it crystal clear just how important this matter is. I'm determined to see action taken for the communities which I represent, which is exactly why I will be hosting a follow-up meeting in late August to ensure all the stakeholder organisations are held firmly to account. We need to see a proper review of the actions taken since my meeting in early February and further ensure that we are prepared for the next period of poor weather and heavy rainfall. I won't stop working on this issue until our communities are properly protected. We need action, not just words, and by holding a follow-up meeting, we will hopefully ensure exactly that."
A dog-friendly holiday cottage company in North Norfolk has won a national award. Sue Allen has won a Theo Perfitis Small Business Sunday Award for East Ruston Cottages, located in the Stalham and Haysbert area. She founded her business in 2008 after years of holidaying around the UK with her friends and their dogs. She quickly realised that dog-friendly does not always mean dog-welcoming, with holiday lets often imposing restrictions on where the dogs can go within the property and not offering a secure garden for them to play in. Ms. Allen now welcomes around 250 dogs per month at 40 cottages, ranging from cosy lodges to large family homes. She believes Norfolk's dog-welcoming nature and exciting landscape are part of its appeal for her guests. Once people come to Norfolk with their dogs, they keep coming back, she said. Our guests love the fact that there are over 90 miles of dog-friendly beaches, but also stock-free fields and easy walking, and the abundance of dog-friendly cafes, pubs and activities. Norfolk is by far and away the most dog-welcoming county in the UK. I know the area and the cottages really well, so I can help our guests choose the best places for their holiday, based on their needs and their dogs. The Theo Pafitis Small Business Sunday Award is arranged by Theo Pafitis, the entrepreneur best known for Dragon's Den. Each week, Pafitis chooses six businesses that pitch their products and services to him via social media. East Ruston Cottages has also won the Dog Friendly Magazine Award for UK self-catering properties 5 years running.
A popular TV presenter has filmed a BBC special on the Norfolk coast. A special edition of Saving Lives at Sea will air on BBC Two and BBC iPlayer on March the 12th in celebration of the RNLI's 200th birthday. The episode follows presenter Dermot O'Leary as he visits several lifeboat stations along the coast, including Cromer. In the Norfolk segment, the This Morning host hears about Henry Blogg, who, alongside his crew, saved 873 lives throughout his 53 years of service. O'Leary also visits the town's Henry Blogg Museum, gets a close-up look at the HF Bailey lifeboat from the Second World War, and goes afloat on Cromer's all-weather lifeboat, Leicester. The 50-year-old said, "As an ambassador for the RNLI and a huge history fan, it was a privilege for me to uncover some of the untold stories that saw ordinary volunteers get involved in some of the most extraordinary events of the Second World War. The brave men and women we heard about left a real impression on me, as did the present-day volunteers I was able to meet along the way, who are still saving lives at sea today." Other stations featured in the episode include Aldborough, Margate, St Peterport and Penlee. Paul Watling, Cromer RNLI coxswain, added, "It was great to meet Dermot and take him out on our lifeboat. He's clearly passionate about what the RNLI do, and it was great to show him around the station and the boat. He was the nicest person you would ever want to meet, and he put all the crew and station volunteers at ease during his visit and took the time to chat to us all." Saving Lives at Sea airs at 8 p.m. on Tuesday, March the 12th on BBC Two and iPlayer.
You are listening to edition number 1906 of The Mardler, recorded on Friday the 8th of March 2024. We have articles about volunteers working on Heathland, a retiring theatre president, the return of a much-loved radio programme, and memories of a singer and showman, and, as there are no obituaries this week, after just two letters to the editor of the North Norfolk News with topics, "Town is a generous one and who is tracking Jedgers," comes the Mardler magazine supplement.
This is an email from John Payne. Some of our readers may perhaps recall my acrimonious resignation from Sheringham Town Council back in 2020. But it's water under the bridge, because I have been so impressed by the way this council has turned itself around under the leadership of its chairman and town mayor, Councillor Peter Ratcliffe. Today, the council conferred the freedom of the town upon Sheringham's lifeboat crew as part of the RNLI's 200th anniversary celebrations. It was a beautiful, touching gesture for our volunteers to be so recognised, given the major part the RNLI and the lifeboat crew has played in the life of our little fishing town over two centuries and more. And in turn, at a time when our national politics is so febrile, it was a recognition of the role that volunteers play in all aspects of our town's life, in all sorts of ways, and the fact that we all have the ability and willingness to answer that call in whatever form it takes. Sheringham is a kind and generous community. We should never lose that, or lose sight of what we can all do in whatever way, no matter how small, for other people.
Jeff Crisp of East Runton asks, who is tracking dredges? With all the talk of coastal erosion, has anybody looked into the amount of dredging that is carried out off the East Coast? I have been watching the amount of dredges that dredge off our coast, about 9 UK and Dutch ships taking their haul to London and Holland. I have used an app on my phone on which the ships' names and details are contained, and also track where they have been, and this shows they are working from Essex to Hull. The big question here is, has anybody researched this? As we all know, if you dig a hole with wet sand, the sides fall in. Is this where our beaches are going?
We turn now to this week's Mardler magazine supplement. We include Driving Awareness Course Will Make Me Better Behind the Wheel, Earworms from a Long Time Ago Still Bring Plenty of Joy, and Form an Orderly Queue for My Course on Self-Service Checkouts. But first, there are far more annoying things in restaurants than dogs. Recently, columnist Peter Franson provoked predictable and, of course, largely anonymous outrage from social media keyboard warriors when he dared to suggest that dogs should not be allowed into restaurants. I am a dog owner myself, and while my pooch has been going to the pub since he was a pup, I don't take him into restaurants because I know he would embarrass me and disrupt others by cadging for food, squeaking with excitement, and ensuring the whole establishment was aware of his presence. However, I happen to think Peter is wrong, because there are many dogs which are better behaved than my own cockapoo. Go to any restaurant in France and you will see them quietly sharing the space with their owners. They are not spoiling anyone's dinner time. There are many things more annoying in restaurants than a well-behaved dog. Here are just five of them. Firstly, selfish dog owners. It's not dogs themselves which are to blame, but those owners who think that their own rights somehow trump those of everybody else to eat their meal free of barking, wet dog smells, and dog hairs on the seats. Well-behaved dogs sitting quietly under the table are no problem. It is those which are allowed to run riot which cause the problems. Which brings me on to selfish children owners, aka parents. Children in restaurants is yet another area where our continental neighbours seem to have got it right. In France or Italy, children are taught from a very young age how to behave in a public dining room, how to eat with good table manners, and how to respect everybody else's right to a pleasant meal. Children will only run riot if parents allow them to, and unfortunately this is so common that many reasonable people, some child owners themselves, support making restaurants child-free. I think this is a shame if we don't teach the next generation the joys of eating out. What future is there for our hospitality industry? So by all means, bring your kids to a restaurant. Just make sure that they know the rules and that they understand respect for other people. Take responsibility for keeping them engaged and accept that if they become bored and disruptive, you may need to take them outside for a while. Yes, this may interrupt your meal, but they are your kids and you don't have the right to let them interrupt mine. Mobile phone addicts. A restaurant should be a place of joy, and there are few things guaranteed to suck the joie de vivre from a dining room than that table for two occupied by people who are more interested in their phones than what is on their plates, or indeed, on each other. You know the type. They barely say a word to each other. The only time they smile is when they happen across an amusing cat video on Facebook, and the atmosphere in a 10-metre radius of their table is as frosty as the chef's signature nitrogen-cooled foam, which they are studiously ignoring. If the person on the other end of your WhatsApp conversation is so interesting, why aren't you having dinner with them? Instagrammers. Given that food is something that we mainly appreciate with our senses of smell and taste, why is it that so many people are obsessed with taking photos from multiple angles of every morsel of food they are served? Whoever do they think has the time to appreciate these photographic masterpieces? Meanwhile, the rest of us have to suffer constant flashes while these people repeatedly stand up to get signature Instagram from above angles. And spare a thought for the poor waiters, whose work is forever being interrupted, while they wait for these self-obsessed narcissists to get the perfect shot. The irony is that most restaurants have much better Instagram feeds than you will ever have, because unlike most amateur influencers, restaurant marketeers actually know how to frame a good photograph. Shouters. Partly this is the fault of restaurants themselves, which do seem to be deluded that they can create atmosphere through the use of deafening music, which makes conversation all but impossible. But even in music-free restaurants, you will always get the group who think their conversation is so witty that they should share it with everyone in the place by conveying their inane and witticisms at maximum volume. We are not interested. Just put a sock in it. That article by Andy Newman was from the EDP of the 21st of February, 2024.
A few months ago, an unwelcome letter came through the post asking ominous questions. Were you the named driver in charge of this vehicle on such and such a date? I had to jog my memory as to where I was, only to realise it was one early morning in Norwich city centre. And as the events of the morning started flashing back before my eyes, I soon remembered what had taken place that morning. All I could recall was some loud shouting from what seemed to be a very respectable distance between myself and a person on a push bike. My thought at the time was, goodness, someone is angry. And I actually hoped they would have a better day after the shouting was over. I was mortified, therefore, to read the letter further and realise I was the person at whom that anger was aimed all those weeks back. But how was it possible? I wasn't anywhere near this cyclist, who in my rear-view mirror was a good half mile away, or so it seemed. The letter went on to explain that I had pulled out in front of a cyclist without due care, although I would beg to differ. The cyclist was nowhere near my car, Your Honour. I was already envisaging the court case and how I would defend myself, having confirmed that I was the driver and sending my acknowledgement in the post. I had to wait agonising days, which felt like weeks and months, to discover what the outcome would be. And all the time I played the scene over and over again in my head. I was even hoping, if I saw this cyclist again, I could try and understand what had actually happened and give my humble apology for the distress I may have caused. I'd also convinced myself that the cyclist was probably having a bad day, and I just happened to be the victim. Apart from one incident 13 years ago, when I was monitored in a 50-mile-an-hour limit at 55 miles an hour, I have been proud to keep a clean driver's licence. I consider myself to be a good driver, but on that occasion, I was travelling home from a late gig at night with a teething baby in the car. She had cried all the way home, which must have distracted me. It may sound like an excuse, but it really was a stressful drive, and I was very cross with myself for having let my guard down. Back to the recent incident. And a letter finally arrived with an offer to either send in my driver's licence or attend a driving awareness course. So I chose the latter. I had opted to join an online course, and I was a bit apprehensive when the day arrived. However, straight away, the course leader made us all feel at ease. He really was accommodating, and we all relaxed completely. After a while, we started volunteering information as to what had led us to this course, and before we knew it, we could clearly understand why we were there and the need to keep ourselves aware of changes to the highway code. In fact, I would even go so far as to recommend a refresher course at least every 4 years for all drivers, including changes to the code and the recognition of the bad habits that can creep up on even the most competent and confident driver over the years. I think this really could help to reduce some of our major and minor accidents on our roads. So in the end, I want to thank the cyclist whose complaint led me to the driver awareness course. It was good to refresh the mind, but also to learn that my mistake was failing to leave a car's width distance between myself and the cyclist. This was clear from the cyclist's helmet camera. However, in some of our country roads here in Norfolk, you can barely even fit one car's width between the hedges on either side. And so when encountering a cyclist in these lanes, it's better to hold back and breathe. What's the rush anyway? That article by Anna Mudecker is taken from the EDP on the 17th of February 2024.
And now, the joy of earworms. Surely one of the most unfortunate phrases ever coined is earworm. It sounds so squirmy that the moment you hear it, the little finger of your right hand is likely automatically to obey the impulse to poke its way into the ear, to start mining its way into that dark tunnel beyond the flap that holds your spectacles in place. I say right hand, but it applies equally to the left, if that's the way you're inclined. But it turns out that earworms needn't be squirmy at all. They can be little drops of persistent magic that scatter music to colour the day. Mozart or Maria Callas, Delius or Duke Ellington, Ella Fitzgerald or Elgar could nestle beside the eardrum and charm the hours until the next worm comes along. These are your personal worms, there to please you and trouble nobody else. I often have earworm visits and seldom complain because they are usually welcome, which is not to say that I'm never beset by the odd noisy pest. I'll name no offenders, but they tend to leak from the undisciplined radios aloft among scaffolders or the lowered windows of adjacent cars or vans. The latest earworms to come my way and deliver daily pleasure are old favourites. I hear one even now. Songs and tunes from a film of 1953. The Bandwagon starring Fred Astaire and a host of other fine talents, not least the director Vincente Minnelli, the writers Betty Comden and Adolph Green, the songwriters Arthur Schwartz and Howard Dietz. Dietz's day job was as publicity director for MGM. He brought us that Roaring Lion. Sparkling on screen with Fred were the lovely Sid Charisse and our own Jack Buchanan, whose footwork was a rare match for Fred. Their song and dance on I Guess I'll Have to Change My Plan is a classic White Tie and Tails performance. I know of no better film to drive away those blues that can be brought on by the dark, damp evenings of this time of year. The best musical of the month, the year, the decade, or for all I know, of all time, wrote a critic on the film's release. Give that man a drink. I second what he put. The film has so many songs, but the most persistent earworm is Dancing in the Dark, written as long ago as 1931 and never showing its age. Fred and Sid dance in the dark in the park, exiting by stepping aboard a horse-drawn carriage. It was easy for Dancing in the Dark to enter the earworm stakes. There are nearly 30 versions in my record collection, one of them being Fred's, which he never sang in the film. He and the words came together in a session he recorded with the fine jazz pianist Oscar Peterson. Another lifetime earworm performance that jockeys for oral space is Artie Shaw's orchestra, recorded in 1939. No vocal, just a gently swinging version with Shaw's clarinet featured. This hooked me when I was still a schoolboy. Jack Jackson used it to sign off his record roundup late on Saturday night after my mum and dad had gone to bed. When I presided over a record programme on Radio Norfolk, I pinched Artie's recording. I even pinched the voice of Jack's cat, Tiddles, who joined in as he was put out for the night. Shaw's version was a huge hit, awarded no fewer than 8 gold discs. He had the same number of marriages too. I read recently that the writer found it depressing that nobody seemed to bother whistling in the street anymore. I thought at first that it might be a shortage of tunes worth pursing the lips for. But there's no shortage. You just have to reach back a few years, and there the little beauties are. That item by Paul Barnes was from the EDP of the 30th of January 2024.
And to finish this week's supplement, Helen's thoughts on self-service. Well, I was going to start by sticking to one of my rare January resolutions, the one where I told myself not to be so ready to get worked up over things. For instance, being left to hang on the phone for what seems like hours while trying to speak to a human being, or trying to keep calm in a queue as I wait for somebody, anybody, to serve me. But what I heard on the radio as I thought about these things made me change course a bit. It was the news that shoplifting is on the rise, and so are assaults, some of them serious, on the long-suffering shop staff. I wondered if part of the shoplifting problem was caused by the fact that there are fewer people available to deal with customers who run out of the shop without paying, turning nasty if they get stopped. My own patience was sorely tested on one miserable Monday recently. I'd been with the same bank for more than 50 years. There were times when I expected to wait to be served. That was in the days when there were people behind the counters. Some even remembered my face and name. When you go into this particular branch now, there's one or even two suited staff standing with their smartphones, asking what you'd like to do today. Paying in cash? See this queue. Join it and proceed to the machine that will do it for you. Taking out cash? There are several options. If you get stuck, just ask and someone will come over to show you how to work the machine. Pity you're such an idiot. They don't actually say that, but I bet they're thinking it. Paying in a check? Remember them? Aha, there's a different machine for that bit of business. Oh, but wait, so sorry, but the checks you have there won't work in this machine. You'll now have to join another queue and make your way to that counter to pay that one in. Is there any chance that you could help me at all, as I've already been waiting rather a long time? I meekly ask. Not a chance. They're too busy standing at the door. I did get served eventually, which was just as well, because if I'd been there much longer, we'd have reached 1 p.m. The counter service would have closed, and after that it would have been machines or nothing. Now, I don't blame the staff for all this business. They presumably have no choice. But after talking to others in the queue, I know I'm certainly not alone in my frustration. Having struggled to keep my cool in the bank, I ambled over to a nearby well-known store. What do I find? But yet more machines, kindly put into the food area so that we can scan and pay for items ourselves. They do still have a few tills where you can get help from a real person, but as you wait, there's often a person who will come along to try and entice you to go onto a machine instead. We know there's a problem with shoplifting here. Some customers are so annoyed and frustrated at having to scan goods for themselves when the system doesn't work, they simply put items in their bags without paying. This has become such an issue that the store now has to have somebody stationed at the exit to check that all items have been scanned and paid for. Call me stupid, but couldn't this exit sentry open a till instead? Once again, it's not the workers who are to blame. For some reason, the belief is that all these dreaded machines are seen as examples of progress. No matter that the majority of customers I talk to seem to hate them. Over the years, I've come to know a few of the staff here, and they hate the system as much as we do, yet have to deal with people like me who are idiots at dealing with machines. So I'm suggesting to this store that they allow me to set up a corner where I might teach people how to tame the machines. We could award O and A level qualifications in scanning and at the same time offer calming therapy for frustrated customers. If you'd care to enrol, please form an orderly queue. And that last item by Helen McDermott was from the 20th of February 2024 edition of the EDP. Our thanks to the editors and contributors of the EDP for permission to use their material.
We finish with our last selection of news and views covering remembering a well-loved showman and singer, volunteers working to preserve rare wildlife and local history on Heathland, a theatre president retired after 50-year run, and the return of Treasure Quest to our local radio. He will always be known as our King of Soul, the GI who arrived in Norfolk in the early 1960s and made it his home. As we continue our A to Z journey through the 1950s and the 60s, meeting the musicians in the book The Anglia Beat, who many of us grew up listening and dancing to, we have reached the letter L. Who does that stand for? Our very own Lucas, of course, one of the greatest and best-loved singers on the local music scene. Remember the Harlem Shuffle? His fantastic all-action stage act? And his signature tune, Walking the Dog? He is featured on the bumper new book by Kingsley Harris for the East Anglian Music Archive, which covers the early part of his professional music career. Born in Cleveland, Ohio in 1942, Bruce McPherson Lucas sang gospel songs in his local church with his family, but admitted later he didn't enjoy it. "Of all the people in my family, I think I was the worst singer," he said. In 1961, he joined the US Air Force and was posted to England, stationed at Sculthorpe and Mildenhall. "We'd have groups play at the bases. I just couldn't believe the British appetite and passion for music," he says. "The musicians in the bands loved it, and all that made me enthusiastic, especially because I loved soul. The local groups struggled with soul, and it's a style that is hard to teach. The feeling is within you," added Lucas. He would make Norfolk his home. In 1963, he joined the Norwich outfit The Emperors, one of the bands who had played at his base. "Come and see Leaping Lord Lucas with The Emperors," exclaimed one advert. He met up with Gene Washington of the Ram Jam Band, who recommended his friend to the Mike Cotton sound, and that led to recordings and tours with the likes of James Brown, Aretha Franklin, and Gene Pitney. "Gene was a great guy, well-mannered, and had time for everyone. We became good friends," he says. Thanks, Lucas, a great showman and singer.
A special patch of heathland containing rare wildlife and a fascinating history is being conserved by volunteers with the help of a Norfolk charity. Bryant's Heath is a registered common comprising 17 hectares of dry and wet heathland west of North Walsham and owned by Felmingham Parish Council. It is designated as a site of special scientific interest due to its diversity of rare plants, such as the round leaf sundew, which functions like a Venus flytrap. The heath is also rich in local history and was the scene of a wartime aircraft crash. Conservation volunteers are working to preserve this valuable site, aided by a £1,000 donation from Norfolk-based rural charity, the Clan Trust. Bryant's Heath's vice chairman, Neil Thrush, manages the area alongside Felmingham Parish Council. He said the donation has enabled the mechanised flailing of gorse and the purchase of maintenance of tools and equipment, including two short blade scythes to cut back denser areas of bracken and bramble, as well as paying for transport and insurance for volunteers. It is unique to have dry and wet heathland together, especially on uneven mounded glacial sand, he said. It's important that the area is maintained so that trees, plants and wildlife all have room to thrive. Poor soil state is essential in encouraging the rare plant species that we have on the heath. The vegetation that has been cut down is raked up by the volunteers and burnt rather than being made into compost, or it is offered to parishioners if they'd like it. The heath's management plan is guided by Natural England. Mr. Thrush said that the team works mainly in the late autumn and through the winter to ensure as little disturbance to wildlife as possible. Some trees naturally fall, and we leave these as they make an ideal habitat for fungi and beetles to thrive, he said. The Heath regularly has visits from fungi and wildlife specialists who in the past have recorded 75 different fungi here. The Heath was given to Felmingham Parish in 1807 as a pause allotment for use by the parishioners to graze livestock, take firewood and remove sand and shingle for home use. During the two world wars, much of the heath was taken over by the army for military use, and in the 1940s, a US bomber crashed into the site after a mid-air collision, leaving behind debris which volunteers are still extracting to this day. The aircraft parts are preserved at the museum in Norwich. Today, parishioners still use the heath alongside BMX enthusiasts, the Norfolk Orienteering Group, local scouts and other groups.
After 50 years of service, the reign of Lord and Lady Walpole has reached its end at Sheringham Little Theatre. Lord Robin Walpole served as president for 48 years before his passing in March 2021. His wife, Lady Walpole, then took over the presidency to complete the half-century partnership. Lady Walpole will continue as an honorary patron. At a recent annual general meeting, theatre director Debbie Thompson said, "Without Lord Walpole and others setting up this charity in 1973, when the council decided it could no longer run the theatre, we would not be here." She remembered Lord Robin as her rock for two decades, praising his calmness, smooth tones, style, wisdom and empathy to deal with trickier times. Looking back at their joint half century, Lady Walpole said, "We did it, not out of a sense of duty, but because we enjoyed it. It has been a pleasure, not a chore. We must have been to more than 500 productions, including taking our children to all kinds of shows, from serious dramas and thrillers to comedies and pantos." Since her early days visiting the theatre in the 1980s, Lady Walpole has witnessed major changes. She said, "Things have changed over 50 years, for the better. The programme is much busier with more professional acts and appealing to a broader audience, while still promoting local amateur groups. The Walpoles have used their influence and home over the years to promote and fundraise for the theatre. This year, Lady Walpole's front garden lawns will host a dance party on July the 12th, featuring the Lee Vasey Band, and the walled garden will see a performance of Gilbert and Sullivan's comic opera HMS Pinafore the following day. The Walpole's support for the theatre continues, as Lady Walpole said, "We will continue to support the theatre by visiting productions and hosting events, and hope it continues to grow by attracting new audiences and volunteers."
A much-loved radio show, which was axed by the BBC, has been reborn on another Norfolk radio station. BBC Radio Norfolk's popular Treasure Quest show ran for 15 years before it was cancelled by the corporation last year as part of a series of controversial cuts to local radio services. Treasure Quest, which saw listeners solve clues to help send presenters on journeys around the county, was a victim of the cuts, which led to localised programmes now only airing between 6am and 2pm on weekdays. But now, Norfolk community radio station Poppyland Radio is resurrecting the show, airing Treasure Hunt for the first time last Sunday. The show will be similar to Treasure Quest, with listeners phoning in or messaging the studio to solve clues that will hopefully lead the Poppyland radio car to the treasure somewhere in Norfolk. Poppyland Radio Managing Director and presenter Will Wilson said he needed no persuading to try to relaunch the show after it was axed by the BBC after 15 years. "Treasure Quest was a great concert, brilliantly delivered by the presenters and production team and loved by listeners," he said. "Our own listeners suggested we take the old format and give it a Poppyland twist, so with the help of the Poppyland radio team, we're bringing Treasure Hunt back home to Norfolk." Presenter Mark Bunders Blundell will anchor the show from the Poppyland Radio's The Pod studio in North Norfolk, relying on help from listeners to solve the clues set by the station's quizmaster, Steve Osborne. He'll then pass on instructions directly to the station's car, which will be out on the road across Norfolk, searching for the treasure. Treasure Hunt will be broadcast live on Poppyland Radio every Sunday from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. Poppyland Radio is available online at poppylandradio.co.uk, via your smart speaker, or the free Poppyland Radio app.
And that brings us to the end of this edition of The Mardler, with readings from the North Norfolk News. If you have any comments or queries, our listener liaison officer is Imogen Waterson on 01263 587 610. And, of course, if you have an iPhone, iPad or computer, or know someone who has, you can listen to this and other editions online at mardler.org.uk. You can also use an Alexa smart speaker to listen using the talking newspaper skill. But please, when returning the pouch and memory stick, remember to reverse the label. The sound engineer this week was David Mitchell, and the editor and producer was David Audley. And our colleagues in the copying and dispatch room join us in thanking you for listening and wishing you a week to remember. And we look forward to joining you again next Friday. But for now, it's cheerio!